And then do it like this.
How did you enjoy yesterday?
This day's show? I didn't like it.
You didn't?
No, because we were requested to keep it... See, ordinarily when we do a show, we change the words to the songs based on what happened that day. My favorite show of the bunch here was the second show on the first night, where we changed everything. And that's when I enjoy the show. If I can laugh when I'm on stage because, you know, something creative is happening in that regard, that's when I really enjoy the show. Yet last night's show was competent and it was tight, and it was done because we are making a CD live at the Odeon Hammersmith. So people from the company said, well, you know, you can't just go around and change all these lyrics, so people want to hear the real lyrics. And, you know, so I said, okay, play it straight. So I went out there and played it straight. And also it was being videotaped by French television, and you can't be too far out, you know, when you're doing that, because how are they going to subtitle it?
I thought playing in France then was quite a
twist. They wanted that. That's the reason why they came to do it, because in France it's being released as a single on the continent.
A single?
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised, actually, by... I mean, because it's a direct insult to the French if you...
No, it's not. It is fair commentary on what Frenchness means to a person who is not French and has to be subjected to Frenchness. It is not a... put down of the French, it is the facts.
Yes.
Now, I was able to ascertain from some interviews I did in France that the toilet that we're speaking of in this song is referred to in France as the Turkish toilet. So, if it's a Turkish toilet, then what's it doing in France? Because that's all I know from French toilets, is the thing with a bomb site and the two footprints where you pull the chain, and if you're lucky, it doesn't climb up to your ankles. The stuff comes up out of the hole. But all the stuff in that song is true, including the mystery blowjob that happened to one of the guys in the band. You know, he started with his green fudge coming out of his weenie, and he didn't realize that you could get this disease from sticking it in somebody's mouth. That was because he was a chump. But it did happen in France, so it belongs in the song.
Yes. From The Man from Utopia,
mm-hmm.
for instance, there's quite a lot of laughter and humor, which you've said before, when you laugh at something spontaneous,
mm-hmm.
you enjoy the show. For instance, The Radio Is Broken.
I love that song. Most people hate that song, but I love it.
10-year-old kiddie's favorite.
Yeah?
Yes, I mean, he loves the parts.
If he only could understand the lyrics, though, because it's talking about things from science fiction movies that really exist, and if he hasn't seen those things, I mean, if he had, the idea of what the Bacchano is, is very special stuff. You know, it's very, very inside.
You've been making references to... what do you call them, fiction movies or
science fiction movies.
For years on end. I mean,
I like them.
It's a long, long time, really. What is it most that attracts you to them? Is it the cheapness in them?
Yeah, it's absolutely the cheapness.
Mm.
That's that anybody would think for a minute that something made out of a rubber is going to scare you in a black and white movie. You know, it's like so stupid.
Mm. Did you find it perhaps sad in a way that we don't, on the side of the continent, experience the same films that you do, so there's more recoil of such?
Well, the other side of that is that outside of the United States, people seem to pay more attention to the musical side rather than to the instrumental side rather than the lyrical side, because they don't know what to make of the lyrics. They don't understand anything about the lyrics. Even the words they think they understand are being used in ways that they don't understand. So maybe it balances out. In the United States are more oriented toward the words and less toward the music.
Mm. So when you come here, do you actually have to prepare a special show?
Usually what I do is, in places where they don't speak English well or at all, we stick to songs that are always that have already been released on an album, because the albums have lyrics in them, and so somebody has a chance to hear something familiar. You can't, for example, in France, do a show that has a lot of new material in it. It's just totally senseless. Or Spain, too. Or Italy. In Germany, you can, because the English comprehension is a little bit better there. But in France, no.
Is it a headache for you to choose from the repertoire of songs that you've got? It must be.
Well, the repertoire that we choose from for this particular band is 65 songs that they can play without worrying. That's three shows worth of material, and every show is different. each night before the show, I make up a list of what they're going to play that night, and that way we don't get bored. And each day during the sound check, we rehearse new songs that we're going to put into the show.
Does that happen with every band that you normally have?
Every band, yeah.
65 or approximately?
Well, the band in 82 knew 85.
Yes.
But they'd been together a little bit longer.
Because I quite like the selection that you did yesterday. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for nostalgic reasons, mm-hmm. doing things from the live album, the Roxy album, mm-hmm. and some of them even going way, way back. And also the interest that you've always had in doo-wop,
mm-hmm.
Doing that and...
This band can do doo-wop. You know, the other bands I've had couldn't really get to it, but we have the voices to cover the doo-wop stuff pretty good.
Four vocals on it, which is quite good, I thought, yeah.
Real doo-wop is with a quintet.
Yes. The one thing which people ask me all the time is, when they make reference to you, is like, they find it very difficult to put the finger, to say, where is Frank Zappa at these days? For instance, like...
Well, the question is, who cares? Why should I be anywhere? The fact is, I'm still making music of all different kinds, and why should I be anywhere that you want me to be? You know? It's like, I shouldn't live in a box. It's not like the thing on this guy's hand here.
Yeah, what they're perhaps referring to was mostly the material that you choose to use. For instance, like the last album, the Utopia album,
mm-hmm.
was very... uncommercial. Not that your music is commercial, but
that one was very uncommercial. Yes.
Compared to this one, the new album is hinting more on the easier side of listening.
That's right.
And
but I do both things.
Yes.
And there are songs.
How do you make the choice? This is what I want to know.
Well, sir.
Wake up one morning and say, "I'm going to do that this week."
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's the same way I make up the choice for what we're going to play in the show that night. The choices are based on some scientific reasons, like what are the acoustics like in the hall? Can we get away with this type of material here? Do they speak English here? Are the vocalists, does anybody have a sore throat that day? You know, little things like that. You can change the show to accommodate what your circumstances are. Same thing with an album, you know. You decide how many songs you've recorded, which ones fit together. There are always songs that are left out of an album.
Because your shows are very well rehearsed.
Oh, immaculately rehearsed.
That's right. You've said that so many times, and hence the feedback that you did get in the press from some ex-musicians.
Well, that's...
Not being strict, but...
Let me say this right now. Any ex-musician is an ex-musician for one of two reasons. One, he's not good enough to be in the band anymore. Or two, he had a career opportunity that led him to resign his post, for which there are probably 30 people waiting for his job. I have no problem getting people to volunteer to subject themselves to the discipline that's in the band. And if you knew anything about the band and the crew, there is a spirit of accomplishment that is surrounds this touring unit that is really quite remarkable, second only to being in the Marines, because this band can go out there and do anything. And they know it, and they are thankful that they were rehearsed to the point where even under the most adverse circumstances, they can go out and do a two-hour show that'll kick your ass. And the crew will have the thing up and down in record time, and everybody gets along, and they're happy to be doing it. And that's what the discipline is all about. A guy who leaves the band and complains about the discipline, he's maybe regretting the fact that he's not in the band anymore, and so how else is he going to get his name in the paper than to say that I'm a dictator? Well, fact of the matter is, I am the dictator. I'm the guy who signs the checks. I'm also the guy who has to take the responsibility for everything that goes wrong. And along with that, I have the responsibility for making sure that the band delivers a good performance to an audience that's bought a ticket. So it's not really being a dictator, it's being the referee between the audience and the band. Audience buys a ticket, I say, okay band, you have to do this, and these people want it good, so give it to them good. And if they don't do it well, they either have to improve themselves or they go. The word in the band is, will that be an aisle or a window? Which means your ticket back to Los Angeles is right over here. And everybody knows that. And I've sent two guys home already from this tour.
I think really what you're saying is very fair, obviously, because what you're requesting of the musicians is...
That they do their job.
Do their job. It's quite easy, really. You buy some goods and you want the delivery of the goods.
Right, but see, the people that find that baffling would be people who have like a union mentality, you know? the union mentality means that too many people do too little work for too much money and then go on strike in order to get more days off. And there are a lot of people like this in the world who think that that's the way things ought to be. My attitude is this: I pay money to have a service performed for me on behalf of an audience that pays money to have a service performed for them. And I'm there to make sure that if somebody buys a ticket to my show, they're not going to be disappointed in it. They're going to see a band that knows what they're doing, that does it well, and delivers entertainment for the money that's spent. Same thing on a record. Whether you like the style of the music is irrelevant. The quality of what's put into the show is definitely there, and that quality is the result of a huge cash investment that I have to put out before the tour even starts. It costs $250,000 to make a band sound like that. That's talking about 2 months of rehearsal, 6 days a week, 8 hours a day. Everybody's on salary. Crew is on salary. I have the cost of all those salaries plus the rental of the hall that we rehearse in, the equipment and all that stuff. I pay for it before I get a nickel from anybody buying a ticket. There's not too many groups that will take that kind of a risk, and not too many groups that have one man in the group who takes that financial risk himself. And that's the way I do my business. So if there's something wrong with that, then let me know.
I mean, you,
the results speak for themselves.
Yes, because one of my questions was like, you hear the band playing live, and they, whether it was a good night or a bad night, there's no doubt about it, there's tight playing, very tight, very good. On a, that applies as well to on a good night, obviously. Musicians leave your band or get fired or sacked, whatever. And they go playing somewhere else, and they sound like they've never been in your band ever.
Mm-hmm.
Now you wouldn't say this person has this person been actually in Frank's band? It's unbelievable.
But you know, but they all like to say they've been in the band. Like that gives them a seal of approval. You'd be surprised how many people have in the ads for their album, formerly with Frank Zappa or stuff like that. You know, it's like they've been to school. But if you listen to what they do, you'd know they didn't really go to school. Some people come into the band as a stepping stone for something else in their career, and they don't usually last very long. You know, I don't mind having them have their own career, but if you're in my band, you're playing my music for the audience that wants to hear my music. That's why they came here. They didn't come here to hear your next album being rehearsed. They came here to hear reproductions of songs that I wrote because that's what they want, and that's what the job is. So anybody who is not satisfied doing that is welcome to leave and usually encouraged to leave. But the guys that are in the band right now, I think, have a dedication to putting on a good show. It's really a good bunch of guys.
Is there, there must be sort of looseness as well between, they don't see you as a teacher, this teacher
no.
figure now.
No, I mean, look, they, for example, Chad, the drummer, has been in the band since 81. And he's grown immensely since he's been in the band. This is the first tour that he's done with electric drums. And prior to that, he was totally sold on acoustic drums and everything. But he made the change. I requested that he change over to electric drums, and now he's totally into it. And you see from his solo last night, he's using it in a musical way, which is something that he probably wouldn't have done, left to his own devices. When George Duke was in the band, I wanted him to play a synthesizer. He didn't want to do it. He didn't think that that was... He didn't want to sing. That's right. But I'm not saying I told you so, but I think that it was good for George to be in there and have that kind of encouragement. The way the guys in the band view me, I believe, is not so much as their pal, because we don't usually hang out together in our time off. Everybody is, if you have any time off, I'm usually doing this, and they're out doing whatever they do. But they know that I'm going to treat them fairly, and if I write them a check, it doesn't bounce. And what more can you want?
You went through a few hard times there, didn't you, a few years ago, I think, on building your own home studio.
Oh, yeah, but it's all done, and it's operational, and all the new product has been done there.
This day-to-day Muffin Research Kitchen?
That's right. It's now a completely digital studio.
So you had that in mind since Bongo Fury?
Well, I've been wanting to have a studio since 1962.
Because you had, when was the first one in Good Among Them?
That's right.
Yeah. Goes a long way back. The last year you had a riot on your hands, in Italy, or Sicily.
Sicily, yeah.
I mean, you went there for a visit of the old roots.
That's right. I wanted to see I wanted to see the town that my father was born in, and I went there and I saw it, and then we played the concert, and the next thing you know, you have the army and the police, each with their own general telling them what to do, an audience that had brought their own guns, and they're shooting tear gas and tearing up this stadium that we're playing in. We played for an hour and a half in the middle of this riot with tear gas in our face and everything else. And when it was all over, we went off the stage and we were trapped inside this place. The audience was circling around outside shooting at the police, and the police were shooting back.
That wasn't a very nostalgic view of your roots, wasn't it?
Well, I got a pretty good idea of what my Sicilian roots are like after seeing the town of Partenico. It was pretty bleak.
Yeah. After that, you were very pissed off, really, about coming back to Europe.
Oh, yes.
You saw that you wouldn't come back, but as usual...
I changed my mind.
Your kinder heart sometimes changes your mind. How long do you want to keep doing this? I mean, you keep changing your mind, but is there going to be a time when you're actually not going to change your mind?
Probably. Yeah, probably. But I don't know when. I mean, I try and accommodate my body, what my body feels like it wants to do. I think that's the only way you can live as a true pagan. You know, if it feels right, then that's what you do. And it felt right to go on the road, so here I am. And if it gets to the point where it doesn't feel right, then I'm not going to do it.
One point that maybe I'm right or maybe I'm not. Has there been any times where your guitar solo is during the concert on one specific song been actually transferred onto another song?
What do you mean?
Like you're playing this particular tune live,
yeah,
and you nearly always record your live show,
right?
And that particular solo found its place in a totally different song.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The whole Joe's Garage album is that way. All the guitar solos on Joe's Garage came from the European tour in 1980. They were recorded on a two-track Nagra. There was a tape, just two microphones in front of my guitar amplifier, and every time I played a solo, the guy turned it on and recorded just the guitar. And when we did the Joe's Garage album, I found the solos that I liked and put them on top of the studio tracks, and that's what's in there.
What you were playing yesterday, and I think you've done it many times before, but yesterday was very, very obvious. You were playing very much what I could describe as contra notes, not going according to the melody, guitar notes that you were playing. It's like a totally different song altogether. Do you ever shut the rest of the rhythm section from your ears and actually concentrate on actually...
Oh, I always concentrate on what I'm playing, but I can hear the rhythm section. I have the type of discipline where I can either play their rhythm. Actually, what was happening last night on some of the solos, I was using a digital delay that had a single chord stored in it, and it was on a loop, and every time that loop would come around, would have a certain rhythm, which was totally irrelevant to what the rhythm of the bass and drums were doing. So I had a choice of two different established rhythms that I could play, plus the option of choosing a third one that was completely between those. There's no reason why the human mind shouldn't be able to compute that kind of math when they hear it, and it leads you into some interesting harmonic and melodic directions. For example, a melody functions in a harmonic climate. The chord that is being played is the harmonic climate. That's, if it's an augmented chord, it's a mysterious climate. If it's a diminished chord, it's a little tenser. If it's minor, it's serious. If it's major, it's happy. If it's major seventh, you're falling in love. If it's augmented 11th, it's bebop. You know, these are all established harmonic aromas that people recognize, whether they do it consciously or not. That's what's built into you. So a melody functions against a harmonic climate in terms of what is the fractional delay between the time that you hit a note that is tension to that chord to the time that you hit a note which is inside the chord, which creates a resolution. That's how melodies work. How many notes are you playing in your line that rub against the chord versus how many notes are inside the chord that takes the tension to rest? Your ear is computing that. Okay? Now, if you're playing a straight disco number where everybody is marching along to the same beat, well, your options for the amount of intrigue you can create with a melody improvised against a chord are pretty limited. Because the minute you stray from an exact 16th note fluctuation, the disco consumer loses interest because he wants everything to sound like it came out of a Casio rhythm machine. But with the type of stuff that I do, once the solo begins, unless it's a fixed 12-bar thing like I did two choruses on Penguin and Bondage in the key of D, that's that. But if it's an open-ended solo that starts with a single tonality, I can do amazing things in that context if you understand what is happening musically, what's going on. Some people listen to it and say, that's awfully weird, or that scale is strange, or those notes are weird, but there's a reason for doing it, and there's a lot of skill involved in choosing those notes, and there's also a lot of skill involved in the rhythm section being able to accompany me in what I'm doing. That bass player is great at following me. He's one of my favorite bass players to work with because his harmonic concept, he understands what I'm doing when I do those things. And one of the techniques I was using last night was the chord that was stored in the loop has no third in it. That means the pitch of the chord, which determines whether it's major, minor, augmented, or diminished, is missing. All you have is the root, the second, and the fifth. When you have those three intervals in there, you still hear it as a chord, but the notes that you can play against it enable you to encompass all the different variations of the nature of the chord. You can play major thirds, minor thirds, and everything in between against that chord. It's more like a neutral piece of canvas that you can paint on. And consequently, the bass notes that support that chord, a lot of different bass notes can be used, and each one that goes against the chord creates another set of mathematical possibilities for the melody notes that are happening on top of it. And when you combine that with the mathematical possibilities of what the harmonic rhythm of the melody notes will be, how many rub, how many relax, you know, and all that stuff, that's a world of opportunities during each song. And I love doing that during the show. That's my favorite thing to do in the show.
There's always like a key that you've got that you like a lot. I think it's a key of, is it D?
No.
On Zutalur's?
Well, Zutalur's was played in kind of an A7th tonality.
The napkins?
Black napkins is not... that's actually two chords. It goes between C sharp minor and D major 7. Mm-hmm. You know, but there's a lot of different keys you can play in there. I play an F sharp major on top of that.
Well, I'm not going to ask technical questions because...
you don't know.
I don't know, but what I wanted to ask you was, have you ever... Not ever, because you must have done. How often do you hit bum notes?
Lots. Because especially if you're playing really fast, and all you have to do at the rate I'm going on some of those runs... If one fret is sticky, you're going to miss. You know?
I thought that was evident at the beginning yesterday.
There was what?
Evident at the beginning of the show.
What?
Did you do two shows last night or one show?
One.
One.
Yeah.
Like you weren't happy with the way your guitar playing was going, or were you happy?
It was okay. I mean, I think that I played better solos the night before in the second show, and there was a couple of solos that I played last night that I thought were really good, but I'm the kind of a guy that would prefer to go out there and take his chances rather than learn a solo that goes in the song and play it exactly the same way every night. I mean, what kind of a life is that? You know, I'd rather have the ups and downs than the assuredness that I was going to go out there and amaze everybody with technique. I want to hear some music, and the challenge for me is writing an instant composition while I'm playing, and that's what I do.
Do you personally think that you're underrated as a guitarist?
I think that I shouldn't be rated as a guitarist. I think that rating guitarists is the kind of a thing that, that's a stupid hobby, is rating guitar players.
See, I mean, you're a composer.
I'm a composer, and my instrument is a guitar.
It's a guitar.
You know, if you like the composition, fine. I mean, my technique as a guitar player is fair. There are plenty of people who play faster than I do, never hit a wrong note, and have a lovely sound. Okay? If you want to rate guitar players, go for them. But there isn't anybody else who will take the chances that I will take with a composition, live on stage, in front of an audience, and just go out there and have the nerve, the ultimate audacity to say, okay, I don't know what I'm going to play, and you don't know what I'm going to play, and that makes us equal. So here, let's go, we'll have an adventure here. And that's what I do. There's no way to rate that. You either like that kind of stuff or you don't.
You traveled quite lightly this time, it seems. You used only this Strat yesterday.
Right.
Is there a specific reason for that?
I like that guitar. I have another Strat in the back in case that one goes off, but that particular neck The whole guitar is customized. The only thing that is stock on there was the original Strat body, which has been stripped and repainted in that old Telecaster color. But the neck is custom, all the electronics are custom, all the pickups are custom, and I like the way it sounds.
It's we were talking about limitations as a before, as a, if people want to compare you as a good guitarist or bad guitarist against other guitarists, like some sort of match. Are you disappointed that there's so many schmucks probably about who go on and just perform just for the sake of the guitar and ignoring all the other concepts of the music?
There's always somebody who wants to consume that, and they're entitled to consume it, and they're entitled to love it, and they're entitled to worship it as a way of life, and so on and so forth. That's for them. Mm-hmm. What I'm dealing with is something entirely different, and I must say in all fairness that without being rated, I know that there are people out there who love what I do on the guitar.
One final question, Frank. As always, there's quite a lot of product in the can, as they say. Always have. So, what's up now? I mean, you've got...
Well, you know that there's four albums that are coming out right now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You've got the Belez album, which is out. You've got Them or Us, which is just about to come out, which is going to be followed very closely by Thing Fish, which is a three-record box with a book in it. And then you've got Francesco, which comes out right after that. Also, the concerts here at the Odeon Hammersmith were recorded for a CD, which was going to be just a CD, not a vinyl album. And that will be coming out sometime next year.
Mm-hmm. You going to give a breather between each product?
No, these first four are going to come out very close together because they won't conflict with each other. They're totally different things. They're, in a way, all for the same audience, but maybe there are some people who might like the Belez album who wouldn't enjoy Thing Fish and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So you have your options. Mm-hmm. And for the person who is a hardcore fan, there's lots of stuff coming out this season.
It's very good.
Okay?
Thanks a lot.
Welcome.
Beautiful.
Da skal vi gå litt grann tilbake til en samtale vi hadde med Frank Zappa for en stund siden. I den senere tida så har det flommet ut med mystiske hjelper med Frank Zappa, med rare tegninger utenpå, og bare opplysninger om hva låtene på hjelpen heter, og at det Frank Zappa som spiller, ingenting eller annet. Og dette ba vi om forklaring på da vi snakket med han sist.
When you sign a contract with a record company, you agree to deliver a certain number of units versus a certain period of years. And the way my contract was structured, I had to deliver tape to them. I owed them four albums, and the contract said that as soon as I hand them the tape, they hand me the money. And I walked into their office one day and handed them four completed albums. And they didn't give me the money. And I had already spent the money to make the tapes. I paid for the musicians, I paid for the studio, paid for the rental of the equipment, any of the music copying costs, that was all out of my own pocket. And they kept the tapes and didn't pay me. So eventually, I kept waiting and waiting for the money to come in. And eventually I had to file a breach of contract suit against them. Which has been going on for a year and a half or 2 years. And it takes 3 to 5 years before you can go to court on a thing like that. So meanwhile, they have these tapes, and they've been releasing them. And they have one more album, an orchestra album, which is probably going to come out in May. And they don't have publishing licenses for any of the material. They don't have the rights to release any of the tapes, but they've gone ahead and done it anyway.
Hmm. Is this why there are no names, etc. on the covers?
That's right. It's just like a bootleg album, except that it's released by a major company.
And it is the way, the music is the way you wanted to present it, though, isn't it?
Not exactly, because ordinarily I supervise the production of a record up to the point where it's mastered, where it's put onto the disc. And I follow it through up until the point where that master disc goes to the factory. And in the case of the Warner Brothers albums, I didn't have anything to do with the mastering, and consequently the records don't sound right, and I also have nothing to do with the covers that are on there. There's some very ugly covers.
Det noen fælt stygge omslag på disse fire LP-ene til Frank Zappa, de fire siste på hans gamle plateselskap, og det skyldes at Zappa ikke har noe med selve utgivelsen å gjøre. Han har prøvd å stoppe den faktisk, fordi at plateselskapet skylder han penger for de fire platene fremdeles. Han har ikke vært med på å lage plater av dem, han har bare gitt dem ferdige bånd. Zappa ligger i rettsak med selskapet og ikke noe glad for at platene kommer ut på den måten de gjør. Og den aller siste LP-en, som vi da nå har fått I hende, og som han varslet ville komme I mai, som ganske riktig den heter Orchestral Favorites, og en slags orkesterhjelpe med Frank Zappa. Vi vet ikke noe mer om den, men vi kan jo høre fra en melodi som heter Duke of Prunes.
Motel such as this, stuffed out over the water, As marvelous facilities that the traveling musician can take advantage of. What I'm talking about is the bait and tackle shop down in the lobby. In this bait and tackle shop, the residents of the aforementioned motel can walk in, lay down a couple of bucks, and rent themselves a fishing pole. Buy themselves a jar of preserved minnows of some sort, and sneak back up to their room, and stick their little pole out the window, and in a matter of moments, catch themselves a marvelous specimen of seafood life. And what I'm talking about is the baby octopus, or if you're lucky, you can catch a mud shark. And this mud shark is a very useful object when applied to the body of a willing female accomplice, if you know what I mean. Because it's sweeping the ocean, this thing they call the mud shark. It makes you go out.
Out! You go out!
Yeah.
You go out!
Mm-hmm.
The mud shark, baby, out! You go out! You go out into the mud shark, baby. Out. You go out. You go out into the mud shark, baby. Out.
Out.
You go out.
You go out.
You go out,
and then,
into the mud shark, baby. Out.
Yeah.
You go out.
Yeah.
You go out.
Yeah.
Into the mud shark, baby. Out. You go out. You go out. Into the mud shark, baby.
Out.
You go out. Into the mud shark, baby, out. You go out, up out. Into the mud shark, baby.
I'll bring the band on down behind me, boys. For the next phase of our Mothers of Invention live presentation, we would like to rehearse right before your very eyes and ears and other parts of your body that may be in dangerous proximity to the radio right now, a new song which we've been constructing all afternoon in our secret laboratory at the Holiday Inn on Sherbrooke. It's a tasty little sucker. We call it Magdalena. The sad story of a tender young Canadian girl who's being abused by her father, who works in a maple syrup factory. It's a special song that we feel that it should go over real big in Canada because it has sex, violence, and Canadians in it. And we know that the Canadians being the most important element for a song that's got to go over around here. You know what I mean, don't you, boys and girls? Okay, listen. Can the mud shark. Let's go back to work on this song here. This song starts off with a genuine woodwind ensemble introduction accompanied by the guitars. A little figure that goes... How's it go? Denny, 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 den. Let's hear the woodwinds here. One, two, three, four.
There was a man, a little old man, who lived in Montreal, with a wife and a kid and a car and a house and a teenage daughter with a need to how to love to run and ball. He caught his daughter in the mouth by the light, and he said to himself, she looks all right. He reached for a kiss and grabbed his knife and threw her up against the wall. Making maple syrup for the pancakes of our land. Do you have any idea what that
that can do to a man. What that can do to a man. Montreal was screwing up it, and he grabbed in the pit, and he coming to himself.
This is gonna be it.
But the girl turned around and
go eat shit
and ran down the hall.
Back to normal radio at night. Oh, this is called CKGM-FM in Montreal, in case you forgot.
You heard about it?
Listening to our concert, boys and girls.
Merci.
Merci, Bucket.
Oh,
Merci, Bucket. Not for long.
The Englishman in the group.
Which one's that?
Together, boy.
Hey, what's the matter, man?
Thank you.
After all the cabins in, you know, yeah. Got the Hulk sitting down in the cabin and sweating it out for the rest of it.
Yeah?
He was 120 down there, man. Yeah. Whoa,
what?
Degrees, man.
Hey,
he's the highest star of
all. Yeah, I'm broken over.
What's happening?
Oh, broken over the string.
Thank you. We back in
the crowd song.
At the counter.
A jump, a call. I'm not going to be able to do that.
more.
Hey, Jim, can you pop that?
Sure. Let's do that right away.
Why not?
In the ship, the Black Freighter.
How'd
that go?
What's
that? And went up the Cunard line.
They're marching into town.
Well, listen. We should sing a collection of Mama's and Papa's songs.
Now we should be
dying. It's your turn.
Who?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
she's such a dignified lady, she's so pretty and tall. You can't call her a groovy, it just pisses her off. She's got diamonds and jewelry, she got lots of new clothes. She ain't hurting for money, so let everyone know that she knows what she wants.
Worthy of
about What Will That Say?
Oh, yeah.
These are all songs from the forthcoming United Artists presentation, 200 Motel.
Another A string.
Thank you, Alan Klein.
You're welcome. My piece, Montreal. Well, it's really hot in this place. Can they hear us out there?
Sure.
Well, we'd like to say hello to everybody in Montreal.
Sure.
And,
just hold her like
thank
that.
Thank you for the wonderful...
She's holding it like that, ladies and gentlemen.
Look at her holding it like that.
Frank, we are here on my right.
How dare she hold it like that?
So Jim Pons to the left of Frank. Me, Mark here. Right next to me, Howard. Ian Underwood. Bob Harris. And Mike Urso.
Bye,
Bob.
Look at this dream.
And Dick Barber, our road manager, is
forehead
here.
Of the future.
And all kinds of friends. And we're really sorry that y'all couldn't come down and stay in this little 8x8 room.
With the steam rising.
It is really warm in here. And now we're going to sing another song called
Hey, Love to My Hit.
Oh, Baby, Don't Drop It.
You know how that goes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do know how that goes. It goes,
You took my heart for a ride and you laid it aside. It was broken.
Oh, well, that's
he doesn't know that one.
He knows the lewd words.
Catholic Church.
Oh, baby, don't drop it. Well, I said I wouldn't do it till the night we were wed. But every time I see you, I forget what I said. Well, are you holding me? If you're holding me, but baby, don't drop it. Okay. Now, listen, the movie 200 Motels is also R. So you're safe. All of you young listeners out there who should be in bed by now.
What are we going to do, really?
What are we going to do?
A rendition.
I mean, we're the mothers.
Introduce your drummer.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
How about introducing me? That's
so awesome.
Hey,
hey,
hey.
Hey.
A
natural
mistake.
Yep.
Yeah, it is warm. Of course, we're breathing used air.
Anything, is there any Greek quests out there in radio?
Greek
quests. Okay, well, we'll see if we can get to that one. We'd like to send one out to Susan from Bill, to Linda from Eddie, to Kenny from Susan, and to Linda from Mary.
What?
That must be a misprint here.
From our possession of the means of producing the bomb,
circumstances beyond our control,
are prepared to make our full contribution.
Due to circumstances beyond our control,
I had orders from my superiors.
Due to circumstances beyond our control,
one manufacturer of atomic bombs.
Due to circumstances beyond our control,
Let's do Billy the Mountain without instruments.
Oh, fine.
Yes, I go with that.
No, we can't do that.
I forgot it.
No, I can't do that.
Well, listen. This is
a character.
You know, yeah. Radio's a free service. You take what you can get. No, we've stopped doing our tunes.
Why do you play on
the
record level? Wait.
No,
Oh, that's good God.
I cease responsibility from this point on for even being in this studio with the tapestry wall. The neon lights that don't work, the old clock on the wall from whence I see a dead fly. Right next to that, yes, the time. Why, it's just a mere parakeet away from a quarter off the zoo, right here at the home of the hits. Yes, Top 40 Radio for all you nighttime freakos, weirdos, pajama party nuts. All you crazy people can't get to sleep because, oh, you know why, it's the size of your organ. And hanging you up, you silly people, a peanut, the kid. What does it mean? Go to sleep, forget about it. Hi, friends. Did you ever consider the possibility that maybe your penis, or in the case of many dignified ladies, that the size of the titties themselves might provide elements of subconscious tension?
Years of twisted anxiety that could force any human being to have to become a politician, a policeman, a Jesuit monk, the leader of a rock and roll band, a disc jockey, you name it. Or in the case of the ladies, the ones that can't afford a silicone beef up, they become writers of hot books.
Manuel inserted his burning phallus into her quivering corpse.
Or they might become Carmelite nuns, which is a little more...
Gonzo, the lead guitar player,
places muted a member in her slithering
foot. Four rate runs, jockey. Now there is no reason why you or your loved ones should suffer any more about the size of their organs. There are enough problems in this world today. If you are a lady and you are troubled with munchkin tits, you can console yourself with this age-old line from grammar school. Help me out with this.
Anything over a mouthful is wasted.
Yeah. Let me tell you, if you're a guy and you're troubled about the size of your penis, and one night you're at a party and somebody comes walking up to you, and I mean, you're trying to be cool. You're trying to be so cool that you're not even wearing any underwear. Let me tell you, and this guy looks you up and down, and you're at some kind of sleep party, and all those girls that are sitting there waiting by the phone waiting to hear some kind of Gary Lewis in the Playboy record or John Mayall record, let me tell you, this is the station to listen to, because if there's any station in Montreal that would have enough gall to let this band in the studio for any more than 10 minutes, it's got more balls than any station I ever heard of, and we want to thank them, we want to thank you, my mom, thank you, my dad, thank you, my teacher,
boys and girls, who must bid you farewell at this time and leave the small stifling studio, thanking them very much for the wonderful opportunity to play these notes for you during the middle of the night. Good night, boys and girls of Canada.
Sad when you go out on the road.
Oh, there was more time in Minneapolis than in Columbia.
Don't it ever get lonesome. Don't it ever get sad when you go out on a 30-day tour. You got nothing but groupies and promoters to love you, and a pile of laundry by the hotel door. Don't it ever get lonesome? Don't it ever give a young man the blues? Don't it ever get lonesome? Don't it ever make a young man want to go back home? When the PA system eats it, and the band plays some of the most terrible shit you ever known. Thank you.
Boys from Chunga's Revenge, and all of that which went before that was from that tape, which we've been promising you for a couple of days. But I would have to say that I believe that it was worth waiting for sure. Zappa and the Mothers, as they were heard here about 6 or 8 months ago. This is CHOM FM at 97.7 in Montreal.